Hello. Thank you for coming to this workshop this afternoon. I know that you had lots of choices. There's no shortage of choices at Missions Fest, so thank you for giving this time to this topic. Just a few words about who I am and who I'm representing. I'm here on behalf of RESPECT, Society for Women. The letters RESPECT stand for Respecting Every Sister, Providing Encouragement in Critical Times. And it's a nonprofit society and charity that's made up of women who have experienced abuse from an intimate partner, have come through usually 20 weeks of a support group, and then want to help other women in various ways. So that's what that organization is. And who I am particularly is I'm the vice president of that organization, and also I work professionally in this area. I'm a minister in the Presbyterian Church in Canada, and I'm also a registered professional counselor who has been working with women who've experienced abuse in their relationship for the last 19 years, doing one-on-one counseling and leading support groups throughout the Lower Mainland. One of the things that RESPECT does is fund support groups. It also funds emergency one-on-one counseling and various other things too. I'm the author of this book, When Love Hurts, and the material I'm going to present you with today is actually from that book. So if some of what I'm saying seems to be helpful, then the book is available in the bookstore down in the main hall. And there's also a website, which is whenlovehurts.ca, so it's just the name of the book.ca, that has a lot of videos and articles and lots of things. So I just wanted to start by helping us recognize how important this issue is. I suspect you already know that, or you wouldn't have chosen to come to this workshop, but just to kind of remind ourselves, 1 in 3 Canadian women will be physically assaulted by an intimate partner in her lifetime. That's a really high number, 1 in 3. Just to maybe put it into a little bit of perspective, 1 in 9 Canadian women over their lifetime will develop breast cancer. And think about how much awareness we have about breast cancer. You know, we run for the cure, and you can't really go into a grocery store without seeing, you know, a pink ribbons and all those kinds of things. Women talk to each other about mammograms and encourage each other to get mammograms. But I'm old enough to know that that was not always true. When I was a young person in the church, if a woman in the church had breast cancer, we never said that out loud. We would certainly never say that from the pulpit, or we were always very vague about what was going on. So things have changed around that issue, and things can change around this issue too. But again, if you think about 1 in 3 Canadian women will have the experience that I'm going to be talking about, and 1 in 9 Canadian women will have breast cancer over their lifetime. Another statistic to think about is that a woman is far more likely to be injured in her intimate relationship than she is to be injured in a car accident. So think about all the things we do to help make sure that everyone's safe on the road. And I have a 20-year-old son who has an L and has for a couple years. And you know, we do a lot. He has to take a test before he can get an L, and then he has to drive for a couple years with someone beside him. And we're teaching him a lot about keeping himself safe and also keeping everyone else around him safe as he drives. But it seems to me that we send young people out dating without even a conversation about what is abuse, what does it look like, what might be early warning signs, all those kinds of things. And if you have a particular passion or interest in around young people, I have a particular handout that you could come and get at the end of the workshop, which is Warning Signs for Young Women. And those of you that might be leaders among youth in your congregation, this is a really great topic to bring to young adults group or youth group or something like that. So we know that abuse takes many forms. Like there's child abuse, and sometimes people are abused by their bosses, and anywhere where there's an inequality of power, actually abuse can take place. I'm also aware that sometimes men are abused in their relationships with women, but statistically that is very small compared to the huge number of women that are impacted by this. So by focusing on women's experiences of abuse, it's not to negate other experiences of abuse, but to say this is actually an important topic and we want to pay attention to it and give it some time. So I put up a few myths on the board that I thought we could probably re-examine and shift, some of which maybe you believe or you believed at one point, some of which you maybe don't believe at all. These are very common and strong myths that are held in society, and these are some of the things that women who are experiencing abuse are trying to work against. So us being clear about them is helpful. I could have probably listed a lot more myths, but we only have, you know, an hour, so I thought if we can look at these few, that would be good. So the first one is abuse does not happen in Christian homes, which is not true. We have a wonderful Christian sociologist who works at the University of New Brunswick who's actually done extensive study on this. Her name is Dr. Nancy Nason-Clark. She's written a number of books. I'm just wondering if her book, trying to remember if her books are on the list. I gave you a book list. Yes, but Beyond Abuse in the Christian Home, Nancy Nason-Clark. She's done a lot of research, and abuse happens at the same rate in Christian homes as non-Christian homes. There actually isn't any statistical difference. In certain Christian communities, depending on some dynamics within that community, it's actually higher than the general population, but it isn't ever lower. If we know that 1 in 3 women are going to have this experience in their lifetime, that means that actually in any church on a Sunday morning, there are lots of women who've either had this experience or are going to have this experience at some time in their life. And all of us, especially if we have our eyes open to the reality, are going to be impacted by it at some point. Unfortunately, statistically speaking, it's going to happen to our mother or our sister or our friend or our niece or our grandchild or, you know, someone that we know. So having some understanding and knowing how to respond with as much compassion and skill is an important thing. So that sort of debunks the first myth. The second myth is that physical abuse is the worst. This is a very strong idea in our society, but having supported women for 19 years, I can tell you that is not women's experience. When women come into our support group and they talk about all the different types of abuse, they actually talk about some of the other types of abuse, like spiritual or emotional or verbal, actually being more damaging to them. So the first handout I wanted to invite you to look at, which can help you to begin to think about this a bit, is the power and control wheel. You all have that handout, or you're sharing it with someone beside you. And the website, whenlovehurts.ca, is on there. This is on the website. So, yeah, if everyone can look on, you know, like you're in church and you're looking on to... that's really old school, that you'd look at the hymn book. So this is a diagram that women who've had experiences of abuse find really helpful. In the support groups that we lead, we draw a really big power and control wheel with these different headings and leave the space inside blank and then ask women to give us examples. And they speak so quickly that we can't write fast enough. They have so many examples of these different types of abuse. And you'll notice that it's drawn as a wheel, not as a hierarchy. We're not saying this type of abuse is worse than another type of abuse, because that is not women's experience. So I wanted to just highlight a few of these. Some of them probably you've thought of before. Maybe some of them you haven't thought of before. Financial abuse is one of the ones that are down there. That's a really significant form of abuse that a lot of the women that come to our groups are experiencing. And financial abuse can take so many different forms, but it can involve withholding money from her, not letting her access money in various ways. If they're living together, I always think about one woman who this was really quite extreme, that she was at home with three little kids and he didn't give her any money. So she had no access to money. He was working, but she didn't get any money. And so she would have to beg him for money to get running shoes for the kids or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. And as things got worse in the relationship, in the past, he had given her grocery money, and she had been able to sort of put a little bit aside from the grocery money from time to time. But eventually, he did the grocery shopping, so she couldn't even do that. And he was buying things like sardines and, what was the other thing that was disgusting? Things that little children don't eat, right? He was eating things, he was buying things he wanted to eat, but wasn't actually buying things that the kids would eat. She talked about how he had locked the freezer, so she couldn't even get out, you know, any food from the freezer. And when she decided to leave that relationship, he went to the bank and disappeared all the money. And when she went to the bank manager soon after that, to ask the bank manager to help her track that money down, the bank manager said to her, well, you know, lots of times men manage the money in the household, and didn't help her at all. That disappearing of money is a common tactic, especially around the time of separation. And if the woman is separated, typically the financial abuse continues through not paying child support or being very difficult around those kinds of things. Some of my colleagues who work in Transition House say that a lot of what you might describe as middle class women will flee abuse, go to the Transition House. This is Monarch Place Transition House, which is a Christian Transition House. Will flee, go to the Transition House, will stay there for 30 days, and then will actually go back to their husband because they have no financial option. Because on paper, they own half a house. So they don't qualify for any social services, typically. But an abusive man will tie up the selling of a house in court for probably a couple years. That's not uncommon. So financial abuse is a really, really powerful way to trap a woman. Some of the women I'm supporting are absolutely trapped, and they're very clear about that. They have no financial option at the time. And so typically what they do is they work on a long-term plan of trying to get work, et cetera, or trying to find out if there's someone that they could go stay with or all those sorts of things. But they need a long-term plan. So financial abuse is one of the most powerful ways to trap a woman. Just to highlight a couple other ones, social abuse is really, really significant. It's isolating the woman in various ways. A very common thing that abusive men will do is, especially at the point of separation, will go around to family and friends and church members and pastors and so on and say that she's crazy, that she's crazy, so that she will get isolated. The two most common things that are said about women at the point of separation is that she's crazy or she's having affairs. This is a common thing. And so the woman gets isolated and judged and feels really alone. Even when living with, he may isolate her in various ways by telling her who she can talk to, who she can be friends with on Facebook. All the new, relatively new social media stuff is just more ways to control a woman by cutting off her access to the ways that most of us are staying in touch with each other. So if you have a friend that you're concerned about and or family member and you're starting to notice that she seems to be getting isolated from you, that would be something to pay attention to and see what you can do in terms of working against that. Spiritual abuse is really significant, especially for when we're thinking about Christian families. In my experience, if the woman is a Christian or the man is a Christian, spiritual abuse will probably be part of the dynamic, that if she's a Christian and he isn't, it'll probably look something like he will belittle her faith, make fun of her faith, tell her when she doesn't forgive him for something, tell her that she's hypocritical, those kinds of things. Discourage her from being active in the church, make fun of church, et cetera, et cetera. If he's a Christian, it's very likely that he will use scripture against her, that he'll take a particular passage of scripture out of context and use it as a weapon against her, right? Wives, submit to your husbands, you know, that kind of thing. And personally, I don't think scripture was ever intended to be used as a weapon or ever intended to oppress someone or trap someone. So spiritual abuse is a significant one. Sexual abuse is a really significant one too. In relationships where the man has been physically abusive, 67% of the time he's also raped her. So that's actually quite a high number. When I'm supporting a woman, I always have that in the back of my head as a possibility. In my experience, women are often quite hesitant to talk about that. But sometimes that helps me understand why she may be having such a physical reaction to having to be anywhere near him, like at the handoff of the children back and forth or needing to go to court where he's going to be in court. That sometimes that's part of what has gone on. And of course, some of these things get joined together so that spiritual abuse and sexual abuse get joined together. You know, the Bible says you don't have any choice, or spiritual abuse and financial abuse gets tied together. God wants me to do this or that or whatever. At the center of this wheel, we have the words power and control, because all of these different tactics of abuse are all about power and control. They're all, that is their intention. Women appreciate this for a few reasons. One of the reasons is women tend to spend a lot of time trying to understand, why is he doing that? Why is he doing that? Why is he doing that? And this wheel answers it in part. It's all about power and control. So it's not necessarily logical. It's probably not reasonable or any of those things, but it's about power and control. And if one tactic is no longer working for him, he will probably move on to another tactic. So, for example, if there is some form of physical abuse and the police are called and he has court-mandated counseling, for example, probably he won't be physically abusive anymore, but he'll move on to some of the other forms of abuse. So he might become more controlling in terms of her social interactions or the money or through the children, abusing the children or threatening to harm the children. All of those kinds of things are very powerful ways. And that's very confusing for women, because women will sometimes come to group and say, well, he hasn't hit me in a couple of years, but I'm anxious all the time. And when we start to draw this out, they begin to see why, because all these other types of abuse are playing very prominently in the relationship. Before we move on to the next little piece I wanted to give you in terms of sort of putting the pieces of the puzzle together, are there any questions kind of mostly for clarifying? Like, hopefully we'll have some more general discussion questions at the end, but anything for clarifying this power and control wheel? Yeah.
In the studies, the different studies define Christian homes.
Right. I don't remember off the top of my head. Probably it was something like homes that attend church, I don't know, 2 times a month, or like it was probably something like that. They did a lot of work within churches specifically. Some of the other research they found that was interesting is that a Christian woman is most likely to turn to her pastor as the first person she talks to, and pastors are not given any of this training, which is a scary dynamic that is happening, right? Yeah. Sometimes women think, you know, if he becomes a Christian, the abuse will stop. And that hasn't played out to be true in women's lives. Abuse is really about a belief system about being entitled. And faith doesn't seem to shift that. So, no, it's okay. It's okay. It was beautiful. It's pretty music. Any other kind of clarifying questions? So to really kind of debunk this myth of physical abuse is the worst, for any given woman, she might point at this wheel and she might point to three or four or five of the things on here that was worst, was the worst for her, was the hardest for her. Most women, when they work on this wheel, will fill out in a number of sections, not every section. Like, thankfully, most women don't experience all of this, but it's also rare that a woman would just experience one or even two pieces of the pie. Like, usually there's examples from a number of different things. And just to really help us to understand this, I'll share with you that there was a woman in group once who had actually experienced a lot of physical abuse. At one point, she was stabbed 7 times, rolled up in a carpet, and left for dead. And she said, "That is not the worst thing he did to me." And she talked about the emotional, the verbal, the intellectual, the social, the financial. Another woman actually had her back broken, and she said, "That is not the worst thing he did to me." So if you take nothing else from this time, I would love it if you took that message really clearly, that as society we have this idea that physical abuse is the worst, but that is not women's experience. And so as you're potentially supporting a woman, I don't, for example, I do not ever ask a woman, "Has he hit you?" Because I've had many women say to me, whatever the intention behind that question is, and the intention may be trying to figure out the level of safety or whatever, the intention or how the woman tends to hear that is, "Well, if he hasn't really hit me, then I should shut up because this is not really serious." That's how they tend to hear that question. So I just listen and listen and listen some more. And if she starts to say some things that sound scary physically, I usually want to make sure she knows the number of a transition house. And I'm also really clear about saying, you know, just so you have that resource, you might not ever go there. That's okay. Women who've experienced abuse are afraid of disappointing us as we support them. One time there was a woman that almost didn't come back to group because my co-leader and I were so nervous about her situation. We gave her the number of the transition house, and she almost didn't come back because she hadn't done what we told her to do. We hadn't actually told her to do that. We just wanted her to have that information. So however you present stuff, you always want to make sure they know, you know, just so you know. And maybe not everybody knows that transition houses consider themselves 24-hour a day, 7-day-a-week crisis line for women who are having these experiences. So a woman does not need to go to a transition house to actually access some of their services. You can call. Even if you're supporting a woman, you could call, and they're happy to talk to you. The good folks at Monarch Place Transition House say they're particularly happy to talk to you between about 9 p.m. at night and 6 a.m. because it's really boring. They're just sitting there because it needs to be staffed 24/7, but typically everyone's asleep. And so that can be a starting place for women, is just to call a transition house and just to start a bit of a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Say too about the physical abuse. One of my colleagues said, "If only he would hit me, because then it would match what I'm feeling on the inside,
right?
And then other people would understand."
Yes.
So I've heard her say that a few times.
Yeah.
So that's,
yeah.
It tells you how significant it is on the inside that you actually want somebody to hit you so it matches.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Thank you for that comment. That's good, because we do hear that lots in the support group, and women are sort of embarrassed to say that, but they, you know, they look sort of, their faces blush, and they say, "I just sort of wish he would hit me." But I understand that completely for a few reasons. One, you know, as a couple women have said, you know, if you could see what he's done to me emotionally, psychologically, verbally, I would be black and blue from head to toe, right? So that matching piece there. And also a sense that, you know, maybe people would believe me, maybe something could happen, maybe I'd be justified in leaving. But in my experience, there's a lot of abusive men who are never going to physically hit their wives, because, like, you don't really have to be that smart to figure out that there might be consequences if you do that, but you can actually do all these other types of abuse and there won't be any consequences to you unless the woman, you know, has a really supportive community that comes around her and says, you can't do that. But for the most part, there won't be any consequences. So I think a lot of men who are abusive do that. And this might be a good place to pause and say, and obviously not all men are abusive. And I'm really thankful for the men that are in the room, because this is not a women's issue. This is all of our issue. And actually men play a huge role in speaking up. You know, if something's going on in the locker room or something, speaking up is a really important thing to do. So the next piece I just want to draw out for you is called The Cycle of Abuse. If you have seen this anywhere before, would you mind just putting your hand up for a minute? Yeah, so some of you have seen it before. It's really important. So it's good. We're all going to leave the room knowing this, because this is a really important piece. This is the pattern that abusive men show in their relationship. And so in the beginning, they do what we call honeymoon behavior. They present themselves very well in the beginning. They're warm, they're charming, they're talkative. They're kind, they're helpful, they take their girlfriend out on dates. Lots of good things happen. And they look like any other man in the honeymoon. But one of the ways you can tell an abusive man from a non-abusive man is that that doesn't last, and the honeymoon deteriorates into a time of tension building, which tends to be things like sarcasm or put-downs or joking at the woman's expense or being very critical. Why are you doing it that way? Why aren't you doing it this way? Those kinds of things. And then it moves on to explosion, which the first maybe a couple hundred times through this cycle, the explosion may not be that big. He might, bang a pot or yell or swear or something like that. But over time, the explosion tends to get bigger, louder, scarier, and potentially more dangerous also. And then he moves back to the honeymoon behavior. So that's the pattern that he shows in his relationship. And when we understand that, that helps us to understand a lot of what's going on for the woman, is that he presents himself in the beginning in this very positive way, and that is predominantly what she's going to see, probably for months. That's what she's going to see. And so she comes to think of that's the real person. That person who she met in the beginning. And these tensions and explosions, the first many, many times around the cycle, will, as I said earlier, will seem relatively small, and there'll be some, he'll give some reason for them, right? Like he's stressed at work, or he's stressed about money, or her mother's coming to visit, or whatever. And so she, for a long time thinks, this is the real person, and this over here is because of whatever, is because of stress, is because of this, because of that. You wanted to say something?
I was going to ask, I've seen this before, would you mind explaining like sexual abuse in this? Because I'm interested as to see what exactly the explosion, like the small explosions would be.
Right, right, yeah. So if sexual abuse is happening in this context, then probably tension will be a lot of pressure, probably, like suggesting maybe that she's frigid or something like that. And the explosion could be rape. But it can be a lot of things on the continuum. And around sexual, actually, sometimes men who are abusive will reject their partners. And it seems like they tend to fall into two big categories. One is that he very much persists and doesn't take no, et cetera, et cetera. And the other is that he rejects her. And they seem quite contrary, and it's often in a room, in a group, we might have women who've half the room has experienced half and the other half has experienced the other half. But if you think about it in terms of power and control, it actually makes sense, right? Whereas in a loving, mutual, connected relationship, sex happens in that context of mutuality. It's not about one person controlling the other person. Yeah. An explosion could also be just an attack on her. You're ugly, you're fat, you're this, you're that. No man would ever want you. I'm the only man who would ever want you. Could look like that. So, over time, typically, the honeymoon gets smaller and the tension and explosions get bigger, typically. But usually, women don't see really significant things until she's trapped to an extent, and I'll explain that a little bit. It may be that she's emotionally trapped, that they've now been dating for a long time. She's very invested in the relationship. She loves him very much. She's no longer going to easily walk away from this relationship. Or, this is very common, they may have a child in common, or they may be engaged, or they may be married. Over the years, we've had women talk about that they got engaged and then they saw a lot of warning signs. But it's really hard to call off an engagement. And, you know, women have said, I just thought, well, I'll just get through the wedding and then maybe things will be different. Or he's saying, well, he's stressed out because of the wedding. Maybe things will get better. But once a woman is married or they own a house together or they have children together, it's no longer easy to exit the relationship. So really important to know that abusive men do not come up to women on the first date and go, hi, my name is Bob and I'm abusive. Would you like to go out with me? Like, that's not what they do. They present themselves very well. And it's that positive presentation that's being made that the woman is choosing. To unpack this a bit, the problem is the woman. What I hear around that is things like she chose wrong, her picker was broken, she was abused as a child, so she thinks abuse is normal. All of that is actually blaming the woman and isn't true. This can happen to any woman. This happened to me, and I grew up in a Christian home. My parents are lovely, no abuse there. I had a master's degree. This can happen to anyone. I support women who are of all kind of work backgrounds, but I do support women who are teachers, nurses, social workers, psychologists, doctors. This can happen to any woman. And I think there's a strong desire to think that this only happens to certain women. This happens to women from a certain racial background maybe, or happens to poor women, or happens to women who are coming from really dysfunctional homes or something. And I don't know, but my hunch is that we would feel more comfortable with that because then we might feel safer that it's not going to happen to us and it's not going to happen to my people, right? It's not going to happen to my kids or my friends. But it can absolutely happen to any woman. In our support groups, we have often the majority of people there are Christian women, although the group is open to all women. Lots of Christian women find us. Most of the women come from middle class backgrounds. Most of the women are educated. So the problem is not with the woman. The problem is that there is a certain percentage of men who misrepresent themselves in the beginning and don't show the other parts of themselves until the woman is trapped. That's really the problem. Yeah.
How do we find? You mentioned the crisis line, and how do people find you guys?
In terms of finding respect and finding the support group, this card that says "Be strong and courageous, respect for women when love hurts." That info at whenlovehurts.ca, that would come to me, so people could do that. This purple flyer, you could hand on to any woman that you think might be interested in the support group. It has all the information about coming into the support group. And just in terms of the crisis line, to be clear, this isn't our crisis line. This is Monarch Place Transition House. But there's 604 521-1888. So you could pass that on to a woman who might find that helpful. Another thing just to keep in mind about the honeymoon is that everybody believes it. And what I mean by that is pastors believe it, typically, that the man will honeymoon everyone else. So the pastor will believe that he's a good guy, the social worker, the lawyers, the judge, the friends, and so on. This is really, really sad, but most of the women I've supported over these 19 years who are Christians have lost their church as they've moved through this reality, because a very common scenario that plays out is she thinks about leaving him, and the man then goes and honeymoons the whole church community, and she is cut out. Like, we've had women who, one woman had sung in the choir for like 20 years and was asked to no longer sing in the choir because of the lies that were being said about her husband. You know, she broke up the family. So, which I find very heartbreaking, because at a time in her life when a woman should have as much support as possible, sometimes she's not. And there are churches that are more aware around this issue, and if anybody wants to pursue that with me, they could do that after we're done, or you could email you. I could let you know what church leaders I know of that have some training in this area. So the honeymoon typically gets smaller, the tension and explosion gets bigger. If she's really trapped, like she has little kids and doesn't have access to money, the honeymoon might almost disappear, because he doesn't need to do that positive stuff to keep her there. But, you know, a question often people ask is, why do women stay in abuse? And there are lots and lots of reasons for that. But one of the reasons is the honeymoon, is that positive guy comes back around. And so he may promise to go for counseling. He'll apologize. He'll say it will never happen again. He may express a lot of remorse. And all of the women I've ever supported have felt like, well, I need to give him another chance. For Christian women, they feel like I need to forgive him. So the honeymoon is part of what keeps women trapped. And if you're supporting a woman in any way, something to keep in mind is this is going to be a long-term process. This is not going to be a short-term process. And depending on when you talk to her, depending on where he is in the cycle, you're probably going to hear different things. So if he's back to honeymoon, she may be saying, oh, things are good. We're really back on track. I really think everything's going to turn out fine. But if there's just been a big explosion, she may be saying, I got to get out of here. I can't stay here any longer. And as a support person, you basically have to have a capacity to be present to those shifting realities. And if a woman is experiencing a lot of honeymoon and is feeling really hopeful, I tend to just say really gently things like, well, you know, why don't you wait and see if his behavior matches his words? You know, he said he's going to go for counseling. So does he go for appropriate counseling with someone who's trained around abuse? Does he make the appointment? Does he go? Does he keep going? Does he get into a group? There are groups for men who misuse their power in relationship. The group that I'm familiar with here in the Vancouver area and out in Abbotsford is called Home Improvement. You know, does he go to group? Does he keep going to group? Does he go for 20 weeks? And then what changes do you see? You know, you can help a woman to think perhaps a little bit critically in the honeymoon. But there are other times when I just think in my head, he's in honeymoon mode, so we'll just be here for a while, and it sadly won't last. But it's emotionally very, very complicated because of this dynamic of honeymoon tension explosion. So women say, you know, I love him and I hate his behavior, right? It's emotionally very complicated. Some women have talked about that, you know, they had a relationship earlier in their life that wasn't abusive, and they ended it, and it seemed much neater and cleaner. But these relationships never end neatly or cleanly, because again, this is about power and control for him. Oops, that doesn't work for well. Okay. This is actually an important thing to realize is just because she leaves doesn't mean the abuse is going to stop. Because this is his cycle. It doesn't have anything to do with her. And so it continues through any connection that she still has in common with him. So if they have children in common, the abuse will continue through the children. If they have assets tied up, she's trying to maybe free up some assets, he will make that very difficult. Lots of women have described how he will continue to abuse through the legal system. That's very common. He will drag things out in court for years. And over the years, I've known a lot of women who have spent $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 in legal fees, often trying to protect their children in one way or another. Coming down to the, there are no easy solutions just for a moment. That's true for lots of reasons, one of which is the courts typically now rule 50-50 custody. So she's going to have the children 50% of the time, and she's going to need to hand her children over to someone that she's afraid of 50% of the time. So in that situation particularly, there are no easy solutions. When I'm sitting with a woman who has young children, and she's saying to me, I cannot imagine handing my children over to him 50% of the time, I have no idea what she should do. So, but a really important principle that we always hold in this work is that the woman is the expert on her life. And just think about this for a moment. Think about your own life. Is there anybody that knows more about your life than anybody than you do? Is there anybody else who is the expert in your life? No, right? You've been living your life for however many years you've been alive. You know more about yourself and the significant people in your life than anybody else does. And so too with women who are having this experience. They are the experts on their life. They are the experts on themselves. They are the experts on their partner or ex-partner. They are the expert on their children. But it's quite amazing how often others will step into women who are having this experience, step into their lives, and tell them what they should do. We kind of joke about that in group, that don't let people should all over you. Like, women get a lot of, you should just leave. You should do this. You should tell them that. You should do this, you should do this. And none of it is actually easy. And advice can be very dangerous. I, as I said before, I've been doing this for 19 years, and I don't give advice to women because my advice could be dangerous. There was a woman once in group who'd gone for, she and her husband had gone for couple counseling, and then she had a one-on-one session with the counselor, and she was describing how the man had brought in an object into the house that she was finding very offensive. And the counselor said, you should just burn that. You should burn that object. And the woman came to group, and in the safe situation of group, she could say, if I burn the object, he would beat the crap out of me, right? Like, it's not safe to do that. So women really need to think about safety all the time in every situation that she's in, both physical safety and emotional safety. So no one can give her advice. We can suggest resources. We can suggest that we will help in any way that we can help, and there are lots of things we can do. If a woman does decide to leave, having help moving furniture is often a really basic thing that women can't get from within their circle. Help with childcare, help with driving, someone to go with the woman to an appointment with a lawyer, someone to go with the woman to court, all of those. Make a meal, make a casserole. This is a really, really, really hard situation to live in. And for the most part, women are not getting sympathy or compassion. And one of the parallels we draw sometimes is, you know, if your relationship ends because of abuse, you have all the same losses as if your husband died. Right? You lost your dreams, your hopes, your intact family. But there are often additional losses, like a woman's financial security will go down quite significantly usually. So often she's thrust into poverty. Often she loses at least half of her friends and family, right? Because she loses his family, typically. And there isn't much support. So, you know, if there's a death, typically people rally around and bring a casserole and whatever. So those are the kinds of things you could do for a woman that's going through this, is bring over a casserole or something like that. Are there any questions about the cycle of abuse? So it can go really, really quickly. Like, he can move from honeymoon tension explosion within a minute. He could come home from work and he seems quite honeymoonish, and then something's not the way he wants it and he explodes immediately. Or he could do honeymoon for months, or he could do tension for months. And sometimes women, after a lot of tension, days or weeks or even months of tension, sometimes the woman will do something that on some level sort of brings in the explosion. Like, she might yell at him or call him a name or something, and then he'll explode. And that's very confusing for the woman. It's common women will come into group and say, "I'm abusive too, because I've called him a name, I've slapped him across the face, whatever." But usually when we draw this out for women, most of those women would then describe that there was really unbearable tension, and so then she did something, and then from his point of view, he's justified to do whatever he wants because she did something. So hopefully there's kind of a shift from the problem is the woman to understanding that the problem is this misrepresentation. And I think also a lack of, just a lack of awareness, so that women find it really difficult to do what might be best for themselves or for their kids. We've sort of observed in the groups that women feel like they are supposed to stay in their relationship and make it work, you know, try to make it work until he perhaps beats her, and then she's supposed to leave, preferably that day, sort of, right? And so women get judged on either side of that. They'll get judged for leaving, for breaking up the family, for not trying hard enough. One woman had her pastor say, "Well, you must just be a princess," when she chose to leave an abusive relationship. And they'll get judged on the other side, too, for staying too long. "Well, I would have never put up with that. I would have left. I would have stayed." But abuse builds gradually over time. I've been told this is true. I don't know. I haven't tried this myself. But apparently if you put a frog in hot water, it'll jump out of the hot water right away. If you put a frog in cold water and turn the heat up gradually, it'll stay and boil to death. But that's a helpful way of understanding how abuse works, is it's most of it is subtle and builds slowly over time. And typically women don't really understand just how serious it is until they have a chance to step away a little bit, like maybe go to a friend's house for a few days or something like that. So we just have a few minutes left, and I'm wondering if there's sort of some questions. Yes, yeah.
I was wondering, you're talking about more physical abuse. Hmm. Do people go to these transition houses when it's financial abuse?
Yes, yeah. Transition houses are very clear about the power and control wheel. They know this. So yeah, no, it doesn't need to be physical abuse. It can be for any reason. When I started doing this work, we could always find a room for a woman, and now in Canada, 200 women every night are turned away from transition houses because they're full. But that being said, I would never discourage a woman from calling, because most of the time they can get a woman in, but our transition houses are full every night. You know, we have refugees very much present in our mind right now, but transition houses are refugee camps. Like, that's what they are. They are women who fled their home and are living in refugee camps, and it's between 90,000 and 100,000 women a year stay in transition houses in Canada. So, yeah, but for any form of abuse. Yeah. Other question? Yeah.
Just a comment. When, with this power beyond everything, work, the work I do, then we're finding cell phones a tool of choice almost.
Yes.
And so then, you know, the tension rises and they'll hold it over the toilet or whatever as a power thing, and then the explosion, I get smashed, and then, you know, nice new cell phone appears.
Right. Yes.
So we're finding women that come to us and their cell phone has been smashed. And they've been cut off from everybody. They have no contact.
Yes.
With their friends anymore. They can't call. So cell phones are very powerful tools that can be used against women.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for that example. And I would just add to that also that when we think about how abuse continues after separation, the texts are one of the ways he continues to abuse. So sometimes a woman will come into my counseling space and hand me her cell phone, and we'll look through it together. There's honeymoon. There's tension, there's explosion. Like, it's his cycle, and he's going to continue to do it. You know, one time a woman had been in the dentist chair getting a filling, and had not responded to anything, and he had moved from honeymoon, tension, explosion. It helps women to really see that it's not theirs. But it's actually, when I started doing this work compared to now, it's actually harder for women now than it was when I started. And one of the reasons is cell phones. Because essentially you are carrying this man around with you in your purse. And, you know, of course they think, can I block his number? But if he has the children for, you know, a week or half a week or whatever, and I block his number, what's that going to mean, right? Like, it's not, there are no easy solutions. Can't just block the number. And so women stay more confused longer because they can't get the distance. Like in the good old days when you had an answering machine and you could choose to listen to it once a day or whatever, right? He's constantly at her through all the social media stuff. The other thing that makes it harder, sorry?
And Facebook too, right? So they tag.
Yes. Yes.
Transition house, she's safe and everything, but he continues to tag her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he has the kids or whatever, pictures and you know, just the other day, I was women I work with, their Facebook.
Yeah.
And he had, in the morning, said, "Good morning, beautiful," to her on her Facebook page that all of us could read 12 times.
Right, right. Yes, yeah.
She's at a transition house. Right?
Yes.
So Facebook can be used very powerfully.
Yes.
He looks like a wonderful
person
on this.
Yeah, Facebook. He's posting all these things on Facebook, yeah. We are out of time, but myself, Lisa and Katarina are also from Respect. We'd be happy to answer any maybe more specific questions you might have. We hope that you'll go to the websites that are on the card. There's lots of other information there. And if you would like more training, there's a two-day training coming up. Myself and Maggie Cooper, who's an expert on why are abusive men abusive, has worked with men for 20 years or so. The Mennonite Central Committee is sponsoring this. It's very affordable. They make it really affordable. So you could come and get a flyer for that if you're interested. Or here's the young women one. So thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate you coming. Oh, and sorry, there's a one-page handout of helpful things to say. You wouldn't ever say all of these, but just some ideas of what you might say. I'll maybe leave that at the back chair if you want to take that.
Please help yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's still the 5 minutes if anybody has a question.
Yeah, I was given the sign off from the back.
Did you get 45 minutes?